It is Thursday, which is our usual Perspectives Day here on WFSU, but during the electoral season, we have doubled up and tripled up and actually quintupled up because every weekday during the month of July, we are featuring political perspectives, talking to the various candidates for office in Tallahassee and Leon County, and you are always welcome to be part of the proceedings at 414-1234, the local telephone number, 800-926-8809 if it's long distance, and perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. Oh, Twitter as well, at WFSU Perspective. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks for connecting with us either on the radio, on TV, which is being broadcast on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4 in Leon, Gadsden, McCullough, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks Counties. And you can also see us online at our Perspectives page, which you can find at WFSU.org/elections2016. Our program today is focusing on the race for Leon County School Board. There are two races in the offing right now, and we are starting off with District 2, which is essentially the entire southeastern corner of Leon County, from Mahan Drive up to the interchange with I-10, if I'm not mistaken, and then down to Woodville Highway and all the way out to the Jefferson County line, which is a huge swath of real estate. And the person who will be representing that district, since the current member of the school board for District 2, Dee Crumpler, is not running for re-election and apparently has a lot more stuff to do for the city of Tallahassee than perhaps he used to. That becomes an open seat, and two people are in contention for that. We're going to go around and talk to them. And first, let's get your name, a little bit of background, and why you got into this race. And we'll go alphabetically. We'll start here with Mr. Roger Pinholster, longtime educator in Leon County. Tell us about that background, Mr. Pinholster, and why you jumped into this school board race.
Thank you for having me today, and I appreciate the opportunity. Well, the background of teacher, counselor, district office administrator, assistant principal, principal, state administrator, private consultant. I mean, I've had a wide range of experiences from different perspectives. And I've taught elementary, middle, high, college. Teaching college next semester some, so I've seen that. And then I've also taught in different counties, different sides and corners of the school system here. So I have a lot of different experiences and perspectives. And the main reason I really got into this was I want the school system to not settle. It's kind of like the Comcast commercial. You know, I think we're good. We have a lot of good things going on, a lot of good people working here. But when we compare ourselves to the nation and we compare ourselves internationally, we're kind of average. And we don't see that because it's hard to see the forest for the trees. But I think there's a lot of really good things we can do, a lot of problems we can solve we're not looking at.
Okay. We'll talk about those challenges, those visions that you have of improving the district and all as a school board member throughout this hour here on Perspective. So we, again, appreciate you really coming in. Mm-hmm. We also have another veteran educator who is running for this job in District 2. That is Roseanne Wood. And give us your background, ma'am, and why after – I mean, you – could have stayed in retirement or, you know, run down to the beach or something every day.
And, could have.
And now jumping back into the fray again.
Yes. Thanks for having us, Tom. And it's so nice to be here with my friend Roger Pinholster. He and I have worked together many years and know each other well and respect each other a lot. You know, when I was 22 years old, I graduated from FSU and wanted to change the world. And I started at Leon High School. And what I found was that there were a lot of kids who were falling through the cracks. And so when an opportunity came to move over and start an alternative school, I jumped on it. I taught there. I taught social studies. I taught reading. I taught family group. I taught a lot of things, how to be a helping person. And at 27, I was asked to be the principal, which was quite an honor. I was the youngest principal in the state. And I was able, unlike most people, to stay at the school that became known as Sale for 36 years in total, and I was a principal for 32. So I have a lot of experience in how to create school environments. And one thing that I know a lot about is how you create a school climate where every single student feels valued, the teachers feel valued, the custodians feel valued. And I really think I bring that and can bring that to the school system of how we work together as a team. And, you know, I've been very critical about our over-testing of our students and our reliance on school grades and the stereotyping that goes along with that. And so I wrote a lot of articles after I retired because I just couldn't stay away from it. And then I decided, you know what? If you're going to criticize, you need to get in and help solve the problem. So that's why I'm running. I want to bring my expertise to the school system, my vision, my passion, my joy for learning. And I'm really excited about it.
Well, let's talk about something that you just brought up, Ms. Wood, that was also part of our conversation last week with three of the five candidates for superintendent of Leon County Schools. They were all over the map when it came to educational philosophy and priorities and individual backgrounds. But one thing they all agreed on wholeheartedly was this angle of testing and the over-testing that they were unanimous in decrying right now. Mr. Penholster, your approach there, since we do have mandated standardized testing in Florida, it seems to change a lot. Mm-hmm. FCAT is gone. We have something else. There are end of course exams, all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Too much testing, and what can a school board member do about that?
Well, I think the school board has tried to take a stand about too much testing and sent a message, and I think that's good. I think the only thing that I would really not do is those end-of-course exams and the way they're used, tests are used to evaluate teachers. I think you need a certain amount of assessment. And, you know, 10 years ago we had assessment. I think we were using it more for instruction. We were using it more to inform parents and kids on how they're learning. And I think the pendulum has just gone overboard and swung too far. I also think that I hear at the school board meetings some school board members say, I'm assured that we're not doing a lot of district-mandated testing. But when I go out to schools and I sit in those school advisory committee meetings, I hear them report on their progress monitoring and on their assessments that are required. And so I think we are doing some of that. What I'd like to see is we have a lot of good progress monitoring assessments and tests and things that tell us how kids are learning. Just don't mandate them. Make them optional to those schools and to those teachers. At Killarney Lakes, they may not want to assess math. At Chairs, they might. And so we have them that it shouldn't be blanketly mandated to shut down schools day after day. Should be a choice.
Okay. Ms. Wood, your thoughts on that, particularly using testing as not just an evaluative tool, but actually as a punitive kind of protocol when it comes to schools, teachers, kids?
You know, there are a lot of ways to measure what a good school is. You can look at their school climate. You could look at student engagement. How many kids are staying after school and being in the drama club? How many kids are coming to school? What's the teacher turnover rate? How connected is the school community and the parents? So unfortunately, what's happened is the easiest thing to measure is a test score. And so I like to say, you know, when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I think that's what's happened with the school grading system. And so what you see is schools, particularly our lower achieving schools, but really all the schools are so driven by the school grade. I mean, it is everything. It is like the scarlet letter that you wear around your neck. So it's no wonder that teachers and principals are pushing, we've got to get ready for the test, we've got to get ready for the test. But what that does is it kind of squeezes the joy out of learning. And so, you know, elementary schools have, and some schools have abandoned things like recess, which children need to learn and to play. But because there's such a fear, really a fear that their students aren't going to do well on the test, they can't feel like they can't take that time. And I think that's one thing as a school board member I'd like to do is go ahead and say, come on, we have to require that every single day. Students it isn't necessarily the amount of time they're spending. It's the quality of the time. We talked about that right before the show with Roger. So we need to look at some of those quality issues like field trips, you know, experiential learning. That's how children – that's how I really learn. I have to experience something and do something, but that takes more time. And if you're constantly you do need to look at the data. I'm not against standardized tests. I'm not – but most tests should be for learning what the student knows and doesn't know, and the teacher needs that information. And unfortunately, in most of these tests, the teacher never gets back the information. They don't even know what was on the test after the test, so they can't really improve their instruction at all. So we need to be on the school board leaders in speaking out against so much pressure on standardized tests and school grades. And at the same time, I completely agree with Roger in that we need to let our schools make these decisions. It should not be coming down from the district of how schools need to handle progress monitoring. They need to decide. The teachers need to decide collectively. And if they like what they're doing, they should be able to keep doing it. Some principals are finding great results in using some of these programs, and we shouldn't stop them from doing it. But those who say, you know, we don't really need that, we want to do this, we need to let them be in charge of their destinies, and I think we'll get better results and people will be happier. And happiness is a big thing of wanting to stay in your school, is to be happy in your school environment.
We want to get into a discussion also here which is kind of connected to this whole issue of standardized testing when it comes to how much discretion individual school boards have when it comes to setting educational policy and priorities for the district, given the amount of mandate that now comes from state government. That can even extend to such things as construction money, the amount of construction money available for your traditional public schools within the district, vis-a-vis charter schools within the district. We want to get into that and a lot of other things, too, as we continue our discussion on perspectives with the race for District 2 in the Leon School District. Roger Penholster and Roseanne Wood are squaring off in that contest, and your input is always welcome. If you have a question or comment at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, long distance, and perspectives at WFSU.org. Quick timeout and then back with more. Perspectives on WFSU, and we want to remind you of something that we do with great delight every electoral cycle. It's called Bandwagon, and it is reminiscent of the old-time Americana when the candidates would come out amidst much pomp and circumstance into the public square, and they would give their best pitch, and the bands would play, and people would wave signs, and it was always a lot of fun. This is the kind of contemporary equivalent of that, if you have never seen Bandwagon. And the dates for primary Bandwagon, of which there are two, starts off with August 8th. That'll be for Leon County races, and will air at 7 o'clock the evening of the 8th of August on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4. And then primary Bandwagon for Gadsden and Wakulla County races will be two evenings after that, August 10th, also at 7 o'clock on 4FSU. General election Bandwagon then will take place on September 26th. So be sure to tune in. Lots of fun. And if you back any of the candidates, get up with your folks and maybe you can be part of the cheering section during Bandwagon, which is always a blast. Roger Penholster and Roseanne Wood, the two candidates for Leon County School Board District 2, on our perspectives politically this morning. And back to this whole thing about how much power do you guys have as a school board now with the state taking over so much of that? Roger, your thoughts.
Well, you know, when I was at a school, we always pointed to the district and said it was the district was doing to us. When I was at the district, we always pointed to the state. When I was at the state, we always pointed, you know, to the legislature and the federal government. I think you got to do your job. And you have plenty of autonomy and power if you just own it and take action. And I think a lot of our school board right now is in a reactive mode, kind of in a receiving mode, versus then in a progressive, active, visionary mode. So as a school board, we have a strategic plan. But when you go to the district website, you know, it's 2010 and, you know, it hasn't been updated. And we don't talk about it. When you go to the school board meeting, it's not monitored. There's a lot of things we can do as a school board to move forward and set goals and try to accomplish those. But we're kind of in a mode where we take the superintendent's recommendation, approve that 100% and move forward. And I think as a school board, you have control over the budget. When you have control over the money, you have power. You have control over the policy. When you have control over the rules, you have power. We just got to know where we're going and work to get there. And we're not doing that.
Okay. Ms. Wood.
Well, I agree. Policy and budget, those are our big things. And that's a lot. You know, everything at the schools we refer to, that's a school board policy or it's not a school board policy. And we can bring new policies to achieve the kinds of things that we want to see happening in the schools. And the other role – and of course, the budget is critical. That's our sort of stop-and-go measure. And we can say, no, this must be in the budget before we'll approve it. And I think we need to use that power. Part of this is a collegial relationship. I've been in the school system 36 years, and I've seen school boards that are constantly arguing with the superintendent, and I've seen ones that aren't, and it's certainly better when they aren't. But we need to be working together in tandem on the same goals, and sometimes we're going to disagree, and that's okay because we need a full viewing of all different points of view. And so I think the school board role should be a leadership role. It should be one that brings in new ideas. We should – you know, we'll have the luxury. It's a part-time job, so we can go out and visit schools in other districts. We can come back and bring ideas. We can hold workshops together and really be sure that we have our own guiding principles that we're working toward and our own goals. And I think that's really important, and that's what I hope to do. One thing I'm planning to do is to issue a report quarterly to all the public and say – here are our issues. Here's where we're going, because I think the public needs to get more engaged in this too. Most of them probably do not watch the school board meetings. I listen to them. And soon, you know, well, anyway, we need to get our public more engaged in what our issues are. We have great schools. We really do. And we have some big problems, and they're societal problems, and we cannot solve them by ourselves. We need the whole community to come in and help us. We have 20 Title I schools. I counted last night, just looking at the list, 17 of them have 90% of their students are on free and reduced lunch. That's a lot. And we need to focus our energy, a lot of our energy, in figuring out how as a community and a school system that we can help these children that don't come from necessarily privileged backgrounds, but they all want to learn, their parents want them to succeed, and I think we can help them. But we have to focus. We have to focus our budget, and we have to focus our priorities, and we have to bring in lots of people to help us. And, you know, I think we have a city and a county government that we can work, and a chamber of commerce and a business community that we can work together and accomplish some of that and help our children.
Well, speaking of community involvement, we have a member of the community by the name of Paul who is on line one, and he joins the conversation here on Perspectives. Hi, Paul.
Hello. I appreciate the opportunity of asking the question. I wonder if the candidates would address how they would approach the matter of optimizing the educational experience for transgender students and also making sure that transgender students are not discriminated against.
Very good. Thank you very much for that input, Paul. A lot of hue and cry when it came to transgender bathrooms, but certainly this is a much more a much larger issue than just restroom facilities. Mr. Penholster, your thoughts.
Right. I think it is. I think it has to do with how we approach all people and their constitutional rights. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're transgender or African-American or whatever. I mean, we've got to protect those rights. And I think the president did a good job when he mandated that we all address that. We have a really good – I think a good policy right now. We have a good person in the school board who's making sure we all know about that policy. All the principals have been trained on that policy. I think now we need to just practice it. And part of that is people understanding people from other sexual orientations, other backgrounds. And I don't think our principals in the LGBT community should be that separate. They should have a chance to talk and get to know one another before something happens and talk about how you relate to those children, because I don't think as principals we're all comfortable with everybody. And when we're comfortable and we trust each other, most of those problems are not going to go to the school board, are not going to make the paper, because we're going to work together as human beings to make sure every child has a chance to learn. So I think it's a matter of building trust and applying the policy. I wish the school district would look forward a little bit in those construction matters, though, Tom, because, you know, we just built a gym at Sale and a gym at Second Chance. I don't think either one of them addressed that issue. They just built the traditional, you know, restrooms and bathrooms. So the next wing that's built or the next school that gets built, we need to go ahead and look forward and get that done, because north of the Mason-Dixon line, you know, they're doing that, and I think we can learn from them.
Okay, Roseanne Wood.
You know, I dealt with this as a principal. As I said, I was principal for 32 years, and many years ago, we had a transgender student, and it was new to us. And we, how are we going to accommodate this student? And so, what we did, first of all, is I gave him the key to the staff bathroom, because that was what worked for him and was comfortable. And so I think, you know, at the school level, this isn't a huge issue, but when it comes, we need to address it. These students frequently are picked on, they're bullied, and we need to create an environment at the school where people respect each other for their differences. And I think the more we do that and the more accepting and kids are good at this, actually. They understand that everyone's a little different. And so creating that climate in every school so that no one is judged and no one is laughed at and no one is picked on, to me, is the most important thing we can do as school leaders to help create that school climate of trust and respect. And then the issues will be resolved in a personal way, in a private way, because students tend to be private. And somewhat they don't want to be made fun of. And so it's our job as adults to create that environment and set up situations so that people have understandings of different people's needs.
You brought up the District 1 school situation, Title I, 20 Title I schools here in the Leon School District. And three of the Title I schools, I believe Astoria Park, Pineview, and Bond Elementary, are at the very lowest rung of the ladder. Statewide, how do you bring more resources in there to fix those situations? Because the rest of the district seems to be doing pretty well, but you've got some real critical concerns here. Do you divert resources from other schools and bring them in, or form a special task force, or get? Well, what do you do? Let's start with Roger, and then we'll come over to you, Rosie. Okay.
Well, one, you can't wait till they get to those schools in elementary school. You know, 85% of your language development happens by age 4. So those schools are basically playing catch-up ball, you know, and they never catch up. Unless we support them all the way through K-12, they never catch up, Tom. So unless we grow up and realize some things as a community, not just us. Now, we could put some of our Title I money into pre-K. We don't. We should. The Early Learning Coalition has a great model to work with all these low-quality early childhood programs in our community. They reach 5% of those folks. We don't put any money into our pre-K. That's our farm team. We gotta develop our farm team if we want to do better. So looking at Astoria Park or Bond is that same pointing thing, you know. So we've got to, first of all, look at early childhood. Then we've got to make those schools a place where the very best teachers will want to teach, okay? Has to do with school climate, like Roseanne says, but also has to do with they need more preparation time. They need more support. They need the best principals that don't turn over. There's a lot of things that those teachers need. And right now, it's not really money. We give them $100 each semester to teach at Bond more than at Killarney Lakes, which, you know, it sounds – it's kind of insulting in a way to say that that's what the incentive that the state requires. But they do need an environment where they want to come to school and teach and not transfer out once they get experience.
Okay. Roseanne.
I think that last point you hit on is so important, Roger. Mm-hmm. We need to have incentives for teachers to want and principals to be at the schools. And I think a lot of people are willing to dedicate their lives to those children because they care. And then we need to support them. And as a community, we need to look at from 0 to 5 and work on that to help us have children who are more prepared when they come to school to be able to succeed. So, again, we have to do this in partnership. We have to do this in a whole community effort. And, you know, I would just encourage every single person listening to this show today, if they could do one thing, they could mentor a child. They could pick one child in one school. I know, Roger, you're doing that. I've been doing that for quite a while. Picking a child that can have you as their person. And we all know that when we grew up, we had a person that made a difference for us. And so I'm just going to put out this challenge while we're on the radio and have a chance to speak to a larger audience, that would make a big difference. The other difference we can make is I think we can have some financial incentives to be in Title I schools. Teachers who are riding the bus home like they're doing at Hartsfield to see where their children live, that's an extra duty. And people who are willing to volunteer and come early to school and work for the 45 minutes from the time the child is dropped off at the school curb to the time school starts, I think we can create some supplements that would at least feel somewhat comparable. You know, there are schools that just got grades, and a lot of people didn't get the bonus this year because they made the grade criteria so much harder. But the same schools get the bonus year after year after year because, frankly, the grading system is set up to give them an advantage to do that. And the students that they have an advantage because a lot of them come much more prepared for school. It's not to say they don't work hard. They do. But I think it gets discouraging when you get saddled with a C or a D grade. You see your counterparts across town making, you know, $1,000, $2,000 more just because they get a bonus for a school grade, yet you're the one staying after school and going home on the buses. So we need to look at reversing some of the incentives. And one of the biggest incentives for teachers isn't even money. It's time, it's planning, and it's respect. And so we need to have our principals really trained in the idea of collaborative leading so that those teachers who are giving their all every day feel like they have a say in how the school is run. I think that's they've shown that's one of the most important things to make a good school is that people are in a more democratic situation and working together as a team. And those schools that are doing that are succeeding.
Since we're talking about teachers, let's ask a teacher because Ann's a teacher and she's online too. Hi, Ann. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi there. Thank you for having this conversation. And I think my question relates a little bit in a roundabout way to the early childhood discussion. I'm a teacher at Adult and Community Education where we help students who have dropped out of school to get their GED and to improve their basic skills. So what I'm interested in hearing about is both of your thoughts related to the issue of students dropping out of school, what causes it, what the, some of the numbers are, and what are some of your remedies for the problem and helping students to stay in school so they don't need to take a remedial alternative approach?
Wonderful question, Ann. Let's go backwards here. We'll start with Roseanne and then over to Roger. Go ahead, Roseanne.
Well, Ann, thank you for calling in. If you know my work at Sail, I spent my entire life working on that very issue of how do you make school such that kids stay in school and want to be in school and don't drop out. And, you know, part of that is tapping into what their interests are and what your teacher skills are. I was thinking about that today. You know, I had a teacher that we hired to be an ESE teacher who happened to be a juggler. And so I said, why don't you offer a juggling class after school? And before you know it, we have 150 kids who are juggling and who love that. What you have to do in school is find one thing that a student loves. And that will help bring them to school. And once we can get them in the door, we can usually engage them. And so getting them back in and feeling good about themselves again, some of them are behind and they start feeling really discouraged and they've gotten maybe poor test results or been bullied or something like that. So there, it's a multi-pronged approach to keep our kids in school and keep them engaged and keep them loving learning. You know, that's how you learn, is you get engaged and you do a project and you work together. And frankly, you know, but that's what employers want. They want students who know how to solve problems and work together. So we can spend all our time preparing them for tests, but when you get out to the workplace, that's not really what the employers are looking for. They want somebody who gets to work on time and can get along with people. And that's why I think another thing we should do, Ann, is we should really encourage internships. That's how our business community could help us. Get these 11th and 12th graders out in the world of work and seeing a future for themselves, because sometimes they don't have those opportunities to reach out and call someone's friend that could give them an internship. We could do that, though, as a community and as a school system. It's really a high priority for me because I've seen it work and help give those kids that one last incentive to stay in school and graduate, because they can see a career path and a way to earn a living, and that's really important.
A very involved situation, and Roger, to give you full ability to respond to Ann's comments here, that let's hold off here until after the upcoming break, and then you can talk about preventing dropouts and trying to get kids more motivated to engage and stay in school and all that. And if you're just joining us, that's what we're talking about, education specifically, the Leon County School Board District 2 race, featuring Roger Penholster and Roseanne Wood. And your comments and questions, too, at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 here on Political Perspectives. On Political Perspectives with Roger Penholster and Roseanne Wood, the contenders for Leon County School Board District 2. And Roger, back to Ann's question there, a teacher talking about increasing the number of students who get through the educational system in one piece with that diploma in hand and all of that. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I hate to keep a broken record, but it's got to start at zero. We've got to put more resources into elementary than high. High schools, you know, want that money because they want all those different alternatives. But the reason they need all those different alternatives is because, like Roseanne said, kids are behind. They fail two grades. If you fail two grades, 80% chance you're going to drop out. So by the time they get to high school and Ann sees them, they don't have much success. So that's one thing we've got to do. The other thing is we've got to provide more vocational technical education earlier. Right now we have 9,000 high school kids attending our high schools. The last time I checked, we had 25 going to Lively, which is the only place that you can get HVAC, welding, carpentry, barbering, all those things. It's the only place. And we have 25 kids. One of our schools has one kid going to Lively. Other systems wouldn't stand for that, and other school boards would look at that and go, what the heck is going on here? So we've got to have hundreds of kids. At Rickards, there's one kid going to Lively. Okay. How many kids do you think, Tom, at Rickards need to have vocational technical education? So there's hundreds. Well, I've been there, and I've tried to get them there. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, going along with what Roseanne said, is give folks more alternatives. We have six magnet elementary schools and a couple magnets for high school. But I think we could provide more charter-like schools like Woodville was and now isn't, and more magnets to provide more choices for folks. So when they get there, they like aeronautics or they like environmental, they have a special program where they can go and relate to.
Let's add Joe to the conversation here on line one. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Right. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
What are Leon County schools not doing that McClay School is doing? I think McClay School ought to be held as the standard for Leon County School's performance.
All right, let's go around the table there. I know, in full disclosure, my daughter attended McClay for a couple of years. I know that it's much more expensive to send your kid to McClay than it is to send them, say, to Pineview Elementary or Godby High School. But Roseanne Wood.
You know, we have 7,000 students that are not in our public schools, private school, charter school, homeschool. And, of course, I want to bring them all back into the public school, those who are willing. But to compare yourself to a school that costs so much money, I just don't think that's a fair playing field. You know, we have a school, Childs High School, which is very similar to McClay, pulls from a lot of wealthy families, and they are off the charts. They're always an A. So that's not really the issue that we need to work with. We need to work with how are we going to reach every child at the level they are and bring them forward and bring them up. And we have lots of students with special needs in our schools. We do an amazing job, in my opinion, with our special needs students. They get all kinds of opportunities. We really have an excellent staff in Leon County Schools, but you can't really compare schools at all, in my opinion, and that's part of the problem with the school grading system is you're trying to equate a grade at Childs High School to a grade at Rickards High School, and they're not on the same playing field. And so what that does is it really it reinforces this negative stereotype that, oh, that must not be a good school, when in fact you get who you get to start with. What you need to do as a good school is to bring that student forward. But most of that is buried in the school grade, and so it just reinforces this idea that the schools aren't good. And that's not my experience. They are working hard. They are doing the best they can. And what we need to do as school board members is support them and also lead. Show the vision of how we can be. Bring in new ideas and then come in and help them achieve that.
Okay, because as Joe indicated, and you hear this in some ways regurgitated down at the Capitol when there is a discussion of education policy, the almost unspoken mantra that every day and every way the private schools are better.
Well, I don't know. I'm not comparing those schools. I don't know much about how McClay teaches or what goes on there. I know as a counselor, I would get the folks that didn't make it in McClay to Rickards and Godby. So it's kind of a select group. But the thing that would help us is that we are becoming a segregated school system, more so than decades. And we're continuing to make those decisions. The Woodville decision was a neighborhood school decision, but it leaves NIMS with fewer white kids, to be honest with you. Okay, so as we go forward, our policies are slowly creating these unintentionally. Like one of the things we do, Tom, is when kids are outside the school system and they want to return, they have a choice. They can return to any school that they want. Well, guess where they're going to go? Okay, so we do gain money back. We bring them back. But if you leave a D school and go out to a charter school for a year and then come back, you can go to Killarn Lakes. So we've got to look at our policies in terms of segregation. When we have equity instead of disparity, then we can talk about McClay.
Okay. Jamie joins us online, too. Hi, Jamie. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited about having the opportunity to speak with you both. I wanted to say a couple of things that are based on my experiences connected to education. One is running a research project for 3 years in two Southside schools, Title I schools, where... And this kind of speaks to the other caller's comment about McClay, that students come to school with a very different set of experiences and so a different level of preparation than some other kids. If you have a more affluent family, then it's very likely that the kids have been exposed to books and all kinds of experiences that a kid who's maybe in
not the greatest quality pre-K or even not in pre-K, but hasn't been exposed to language much. And they're coming to school with totally different experiences. And even though the work I did worked with kindergartners, first and second graders to enhance their vocabulary, it was, in a way, a very difficult position those children were in, because we know that brain development happens from the get-go, from within the womb and immediately afterwards. So one thing I wonder is to what extent school board members have the opportunity. You did mention pre-K earlier in the program. I don't understand why, as a nation, we don't put all of our effort into pre-K. And then all of these problems later on, not all of them, but many of them, would not be happening because kids would be having success in school from the very beginning. So that's one comment. Second comment kind of is an overarching comment from the days when I worked for Dorothy Ruth and Betty Castor doing researching success in different hot topics in education. And what I learned from that, from research and looking around the country programs that were working, is that there was no lack of great ideas. There was a lack of leadership. Where there was great leadership, great ideas were happening in schools that were the most disadvantaged, but where there wasn't leadership, it wasn't happening. And so I'm wondering what you two, great leaders, what ideas you have about enhancing leadership within our schools, the principals in particular, how to help everyone grow in such a way that then they take advantage of what we know and is already out there in terms of research and knowledge about what works for young people.
Oh, that was almost an entire seminar we could have on that, Jamie. Thank you for bringing up those issues. But let's throw that out. Who wants to jump in on that? Is leadership taking all of these best practices and, oh, this worked great in the Wyoming school system or whatever, and bringing that forward here, and then getting the rest of your colleagues on the school board to sign off on it, and then forming policies that an independently elected superintendent can say, yes, that's a wonderful idea. Let's do that. How do you do that?
Sometimes we have prophets in our own land and we forget to find them. We have principals in this district that are doing great things with kids and are having success. And so we need to figure out how to have people collaborate with each other. But Jamie's right. You know, the leadership at a school, the tone that is set makes all the difference. And that's – if you talk to teachers, that's what they want. They want a principal and a leader and a superintendent and a leader who respects them and wants their opinions and ideas. And, yes, we can bring in ideas from the outside, and we should. But we also have a lot of good things going on right here, and we really don't spend enough time, in my opinion, on sharing and planning together. We spend a lot of time on finding out what the rules are and what you have to do and what you – but not enough time and real collaboration. And to her first point about pre-K, she's absolutely right. They say it's a 20% investment. If you invest $1 in pre-K, you get a 20% gain. And where else can you get an investment like that? But that is a decision of our nation. We need to – you know, this is a national – problem, and we need to attack it just the way we would attack, you know, getting to the moon or anything else. We could do this, in my opinion, so easily if we could convince all the stakeholders that 0 to 5 is where we need to invest our country's money, and the school problems would take care of themselves because we would have kids ready to learn, and we could go so much farther in our school system if we would make that investment. And I think as a school board member, we should be saying that message. Even if we can't directly affect that, we can affect it by our words and by speaking up. And that's one of the reasons I want to run for school board, is to be a spokesperson for needs that we have. Even sometimes when we don't have control of them, we can at least make the public aware.
Okay, and Roger, you had brought that up too, the need. Right. And in Florida, we do have – I saw the law. It says we have high-quality pre-K available to everyone.
No, we
yes.
don't.
Well, that's what the law says, but we don't. And we actually reach most four-year-olds. The four-year-olds, well, I don't believe we have a waiting list. The quality of the program, there's 10 federal standards. Florida meets 3. So if you're going to have a kid in pre-K and in a Roseanne Fields the same way, you have got to do it right, Tom. You cannot turn it into little school. It has to be Montessori-like, and the relationships are more important than learning the sight words and those kinds of things. So we could do more. I don't think we just need to be a voice. We need to lead. We need to put some of our time, our money, our effort. The Leon Schools Foundation is a separate thing, but there's no reason why we couldn't lead the bandwagon to get money into that foundation to give it to our own early childhood.
Because when this came up, I think this past legislative session, I'll ask Lynn Hatter. She is our subject matter expert when it comes to educational matters within our newsroom. But as soon as the quality word began to be tossed around at the legislative level, the response was, oh, what tests can we put in place to measure the quality? And I'm going, is this
– can I go back to the principal answer?
Yeah.
All right. So two or three things. One is we have a pool and a training program, and I don't think that's been revisited in a long time. And we have a lot of folks in the pool, but the pool isn't getting the same amount of attention that I got 15 years ago when I became a principal. And it's not getting the same amount of development and money put into that. And one of the things I'd like to see be part of that is a internship for principals so that we take people that are in the pool, make them assistant principals, take those assistant principals, put them as principals in these Title I schools where they may end up being as a new principal. I know I did. Okay, so create, you know, more of a training program would help in terms of that. And the last thing is when you're a principal, I think we give out one award in this district for good principals. We give a lot for teachers, and it's not even given by the school board. There is no recognition by the school board that I know for outstanding leadership and principals. So I think we could create very easily some way to recognize those guys.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot of I don't know how you determine this, but as far as the public perception of individual school leadership, there must be some deficiencies there because now there is a new horror. It's called comedy, but I'm looking at it as a horror movie that's coming out about two men fighting for the vice principalship of a school and how venal and horrible they are. And hee-hee-ha. But it's still these folks are critical in the whole process. Yeah.
They're very critical. Mm-hmm. The leadership is what will make a lot of this happen. The leadership on the school board, leadership from the superintendent, and leadership at the school level.
Just a few moments remaining. Let me give both of you a chance to, like in a minute or so, just make your best case for why you should be the person that the voters call upon to do this job. And again, alphabetically, Roger Penholster, let me start with you.
Well, I know we have to be collegial in this whole school board thing, but I don't think we need one more person that's going to be somebody that's going to accept those 5-0 votes. I mean, we've got to have somebody that can go out into schools, be involved in the schools, understand what teachers need, and then research the actual items that are – be prepared for them and have an opinion on where we should be going. So I think for me, the reason folks should vote for me is that I'm willing to look at that in an independent way and represent what they need versus kind of being complacent with where we're at now.
Your case for your school board candidacy, Roseanne Wood.
Well, you know, I have the experience and I have the knowledge and I have a lot of support and people believing in me. I was really pleased to get the Classroom Teachers Association endorsement as well as the Board of Realtors. So I feel like I have a lot of community people behind me. I have good relationships with a lot of people in Tallahassee, and I think I can use those relationships to get things done. I'm a problem solver. I think in different ways than other people do sometimes, so I think I'm sort of out-of-the-box thinking sometimes, and I think we could use that right now in our school system. And I'm very collaborative, and so I think when people are brought along together and have input in a decision, they're behind it, and they will actually do it. So I think that I bring those kind of skills, people skills, relationship skills, and get it done skills. And that's what I'm excited about.
I think when it comes to the folks who care about the Leon County School Board District 2 there in the southeastern quadrant of our county. You folks have a hard decision coming up here. Two eminently qualified and motivated and exciting folks who are running for this particular job. Roger Penholster, thank you so much for coming in and talking.
Thank you,
Roseanne Wood.
Thank you very much, Tom. Enjoyed it.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance on the radio side provided by Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls. And I'm Tom Flanagan. We thank you so much. And we also extend immense gratitude to our four FSU staff, Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, Becca Alves, Jason Ramsamer, Paul Delva, Frankie Verdesia, and Rick Patricus. Tomorrow, we'll continue our political perspectives with the race for Leon County School Board District 4. We'll reconnect then right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.